evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Tomorrow is nomination day for all GE15 candidates vying for the 222 parliamentary seats, not to mention the state assembly seats in Perak, Pahang and Perlis. Then after that, that kicks off the official 14-day campaign period. And the Election Commission has informed us that they have sold up to 4,326 nomination forms so far. So it looks like it is going to be a crowded arena for GE15. But will there be surprises in store for us tomorrow on nomination day? Well, my first guest tonight is Dr. Azmi Hassan. He is a senior fellow at Nusantara Academy for Strategic Research. Azmi, thank you for joining me today. What's your big picture take, if I may begin there, your big picture take on how GE15 is shaping up to be, given everything that has happened in politics this week?
Yeah, Melissa, I think the most interesting part is that, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, there will be surprises on the nomination day. For example, in Greek, whether Dr. Ashraf will be the candidate there, whether Tin Chua will try to recapture Batu, or whether Tan Sri or Shahidan Kasim will go defending his RL seats. Well, taking that part, the whole picture is that I think where I'm staying is Parliament Gombak. There will be three giants that will be facing each other: Azmin Ali from Perikatan, Amaruddin Syahri from Pakatan Harapan, and also Barisan Nasional Berkat Zulkainan. I think it's going to be a very interesting contest. And as you mentioned, it will be a very crowded contest. But again, I think we as voters are spoiled for choice, Melissa.
Definitely. Okay, so tomorrow for nomination day, we'll keep an eye out for any surprises in Greek, Batu and Arau. Azmi, if I may touch on some of the political developments within parties this week. UMNO in particular, several of UMNO's old guards who are not aligned with Zahid Hamidi, they did not make the cut for GE15. They will not be running under in these elections. And I just want to talk to you about the culling of some of those big warlords in UMNO. What do you think, Azmi, would be the impact of all of this on the party, on the machinery, on internal anger among the grassroots? Do you think that the rank and file of all the different factions might be impacted by Zahid forwarding his faction?
Yes, interesting word that you use, culling in UMNO again. But what happened is that not that this omission of the warlords in UMNO, not that they are not aligned with Zahid, but I'm more confined to the resolution from the General Assembly of UMNO, where the grassroots want the general election to be held as soon as possible. And also number two, no Anwar, no Bersatu. I think these two particular resolutions. So the names that have been dropped, not only Tan Sri Anwar, Shahidan, Adam Barber or Halimah Saddiq, they are more towards going against the resolution. So the impact will be minimum. Only whether Shahidan Kasim will defend his seat under different umbrella, that is yet to be seen. Tan Sri Anwar, I think that the biggest warlord that has been dropped, I think he has taken a position that he will be with UMNO Barisan Nasional. So I guess the impact will be quite minimum as compared to Bentong, for example. Wan Teck, the incumbent from Pakatan Harapan, will contest under the independent banner. So the impact on different various parties, I guess, is quite different. And not to forget, Melissa, PAS too, with Khairuddin under UMNO, and also Chela in Tumpat will contest under UMNO. So the impact is going to be very, very interesting. But I guess it will be a very minimum impact for all the parties that I mentioned before, Melissa.
Right. You mentioned a few, potential independents running in this elections. What are the chances of an independent in GE15 do you reckon, is it based on the personality? Is it based on the name recognition? Because it is, again, a very crowded field. So if you have a logo that a voter is not familiar with, how do you think that might impact an independent's chance?
Yeah, I think we are Malaysian. I guess we vote for the party, the candidate that are behind the party that support the candidate. How good or how high the aura of the independent, I guess. Let's take example, Tin Chua. If he decided to contest under the independent banner, I think it's going to be a very slim chance that there will be upset in Batu, even for Tin Chua himself, or even for Wang Tek himself, because party plays a bigger role here, not the aura of a person. So, for example, Chaidan Kasim, that maybe he will contest under Perikatan Nasional. I think it's going to be an uphill battle for Chaidan Kasim to defend his seat under different party. So the conclusion is that party plays a critical role compared to the person itself, Melissa.
Right. Let's talk about another hot seat, or what's shaping up to be a hot seat is Sungai Buloh. Can we talk a little bit about putting KJ there, Khairi Jamaluddin there? And, you know, some commentators are saying that it's a move by Zahid to halt Khairi's rise within UMNO. Again, that seat was won by Sivarasa in GE14 with a strong majority, more than 26,000 votes in terms of majority. How do you see that seat contest playing out?
It's going to be very interesting. No, if Zahid want to kill off Khairi Jamaluddin in terms of political career, I think he just can omit Zahid. Similarly, Tan Sri Anwar or Shahidan is not being offered a candidacy. But again, I think, as I see it, Khairi Jamaluddin is one kind of a politician, or one kind of a YB in this case. Wherever I see Khairi Jamaluddin, wherever you put Khairi Jamaluddin in any ministry, he can perform, even though he doesn't have the background of that particular ministry. Now, that's how good he is. So what I'm thinking is that when Barisan Nasional put Khairi there, he's a big name in Selangor, put Tunku Zafrul in Kuala Selangor, and also Hisham Jalil in Damansara or Shahala, if I'm not mistaken, I think the strategy is similar to strategy of putting Datuk Seri Anwar in Perak to give a boost to that particular state. So my belief is that from these three candidates, Hisham Jalil, Tunku Zafrul, and Khairi Jamaluddin, and maybe Khairi Jamaluddin can make a spring, a surprise in Sungai Buloh, even though 26,000 majority by Sivarasa in 2018, because Khairi Jamaluddin, I think, if you put in any constituency, similar to wherever you put in any ministry, he can perform, Melissa.
Right. My last question to you, Azmi, in the couple of minutes that we have left, I do want to get your thoughts on the allegations that Zahid Hamidi made UMNO candidates sign letters of support to back him as a prime minister candidate, the allegations that Zahid has denied. But I do wonder whether the damage has been done. I mean, what do you make of this posturing?
Yeah, I think he has denied it. I think the letter that came out showing that to support Zahid Hamidi as a prime minister is a fake letter. I think the damage has not been done, I guess. But we have to remember that yes, Datuk Seri Ismail Sabri is the poster boy, is the prime minister choice for Barisan Nasional. But when the list of names submitted to the Yang Pertuan Agong, if Barisan Nasional formed the federal government, it won't be a one name. The list will be either two or three. So whether the list will contain Zahid's name as the president of UMNO is not surprising. So I guess the damage has been being done by the fake letter, I think, is a non-issue, Melissa.
Okay. All right, Azmi, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Dr. Azmi Hassan from Nusantara Academy for Strategic Research. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hello, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Thanks so much for staying with me. Tomorrow is nomination day, after which official campaigning kicks off proper. Now, what can we expect at the starting blocks of GE15? Joining me now is political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh. She's an honorary research associate at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia's Asia Research Institute. Bridget, can we begin our conversation again with UMNO? Most interesting things have happened this week with this party, with the dropping of the warlords as candidates, Zahid putting his loyalists forward, almost all of whom, I have to say, are men, and the allegations that Zahid made UMNO candidates sign letters of support to back him as a PM candidate. He has denied those allegations, I would add. All these manoeuvres, Bridget, how are you reading them? What impact do you expect this to have on the party and on its GE chances?
So let's take each of those things step by step, Melissa. The first thing is that it really showed Zahid Hamidi as, quote-unquote, the one in charge. He was basically wielding his power as the party president. And, of course, what he did is he displaced Ismail Sabri and basically undermined the party's call that Ismail Sabri is the prime ministerial candidate. And he did it publicly by basically axing all of his close allies of Ismail Sabri in the party. And I think that is a particular power move. And I think the way it was done is particularly grating within the party itself. I think it's and publicly. The second issue is, of course, you know, attention focuses on the key warlords that have been displaced. And I think most of these seats now have become much more competitive seats than they would have been before this particular action. We can see this in Arau and even in Ketere and other places across the country where these warlords have been displaced. But what is not being focused on is how many of the candidates that the loyalists to Zahid Hamidi have been placed and parachuted into into different divisions. And when we start talking about certain seats where there is a lot of disgruntlement because the candidate has been the local divisional chief and others has been displaced by someone not from that area, I think this has weakened the party considerably in terms of its electoral chances. You know, I see a situation of diminishing returns. Now, generally, this happens after all candidates' election. There's a lot of disgruntlement. The question now will be whether or not UMNO is able to resolve some of these differences. But I think they are much more widespread and more publicly transparent than they've been in the past. And I think that is going to be affecting the fortunes of the party moving forward. It also affects the bigger question that people are asking about Malaysian politics is, you know, who is going to become the prime minister? And is Zahid Hamidi in that particular list? He himself refused to answer that question to the media. But, of course, his actions have basically suggested otherwise.
Well, again, as you said, he denied those allegations, but it was a power move and it's raised some questions, particularly in voters' minds, you know, particularly as Ismail Sabri was put forward as the poster boy in GE15 for Barisan Nasional. Looking at the latest approval ratings, Bridget, we see Zahid ranking among last of the political leadership. I think he only scored at 12% of approval rates. He also had the highest disapproval rate at 72%. What will these allegations do to voters' confidence in and those who were inclined to Barisan, but perhaps not to Zahid? Might they switch their allegiances to Perikatan? Is this to Perikatan's benefit?
I think that the issue of Zahid Hamidi being a liability is very clear, but the question is what direction. I think in places where you have traditional parties such as PAS being strong and PN being stronger or having a more competitive candidate, they will get some of the UMNO vote in that direction. I think that in other places in urban areas, that move and the support will go to Pakatan Harapan, depending on who is the relatively stronger place of where protest votes will move. I think disproportionately, however, PN will actually gain a lot of the votes, especially traditional UMNO votes, because there's a sense of safe landing or common platforms that people feel that young voters will feel that traditionally vote for UMNO. And what has happened with Zahid's decisions and actions is that it's actually splitting UMNO's traditional vote base. We have, you know, this election is an extremely pivotal election for the country, but you have a very robust struggle taking place among the different Malay political parties. So I think the dynamic will be shaped by the different type of contest and the location of where the seats are. I also think that more now voters are going to be looking at the candidates in some of the places. And so that will make the contest even more competitive. For young people and for people generally, however, there is now a tension what is the type of leadership of these different coalitions and what that will do for sort of longer term stability. You know, one of the reasons why Zahid seems to have made these choices seems to be that he's trying to position himself unquestionably as the party president in the party elections after the general elections. And I think that, people are asking questions about this.
Right. Bridget, I know you've been traveling across the country in the past week or so. Can you tell me what is it that you've observed? Are voters' minds made up? Is there still quite a big percentage of voters who would consider themselves fence sitters? What are you hearing?
I think what makes this election most exciting and also most uncertain is that it's probably the highest number of fence sitters that you've ever seen in a Malaysian election. They come from two different sets of groups. The new voters, which comprise the first-time voters, young people under the age of 24, from 18 to 24, and then voters who have now automatically been included in the electoral roll or haven't participated in high numbers. A large group, and 30% of the seat, they make up 30% of the electorate, and they're pivotal seats where these fence sitters will make a big difference as these first-time voters. And the question for them is how many of them will turn out and which way they will move. I think many young people that I've spoken to across the country still haven't decided. They're watching very carefully. They're less trusting of the political system. And I think that, but they're also watching and with many of them in anticipation of voting. So the rest of the campaign will be very important. The second group of fence sitters are people who are unhappy and disgruntled with what's happening in the respective coalitions. And what we're seeing, these are people who have been more traditionally loyal to different coalitions that are considering changing. And what is interesting to see is whether or not these people will stay home as opposed to voting for the alternative, or whether or not they will actually swing their vote. And I think we're seeing, in different patterns, people moving from UMNO to PN, to BN. PN, we see a situation where we have people who are voting who, were considering they weren't going to vote for Harapan, now considering to move back to Harapan. But, this electorate is very distrustful. More watching, this contest is very much about the coalitions bringing out the political core supporters. And then these fence sitters will be very decisive in deciding what happens with the outcome.
In the few minutes that we have left, Bridget, I know there's been a lot of focus on West Malaysia politics. I do want to give some time to East Malaysia, particularly Sabah. Are you expecting any surprises in Sabah? All eyes will be there on Sabah, particularly to see whether the seat selection agreement between Gabungan Rakyat Sabah, GRS, and Sabah Barisan, whether that will hold. Or are you expecting any surprise moves in the next day?
So what we've seen when the candidates have come out of the 25 seats in Sabah, if you count 26, if you count Labuan, which I do, we see a very exciting contest. And at least, with very few safe seats compared to the past, we see advantages for some key players. But I would say at least two-thirds of the vote seats are actually extremely competitive. We also see a kind of different political narratives coming into play. Warasan's pushing this idea of trying to build a unified coalition. You see others sort of pushing for kind of new politics in Sabah. Others pushing for a kind of, stability narrative. I think that factor, plus the fact that Sabah is a state that has some of the largest numbers of new voters coming into the electoral roll, will make for a very competitive contest. No question, Borneo, both Sabah and Sarawak, will be decisive in setting who will become the next government in Malaysia, because the number of seats in these particular areas, and I think that I expect that the contests that are competitive in Sarawak as well, which are about anywhere from 5 to 8 seats, they're not as competitive, but those seats will also come to the numbers. Every single seat will count in the final countdown of what happens, of who gets the most seats for forming the next government.
Right, definitely. And okay, so ahead of nomination day, are there particular seats, Bridget, that you will be paying close attention to? I know it's a very busy, crowded, and many seats that look competitive, but to you, which ones top the list?
Oh, I have a list of 30, so I can start by state by state. But in the case of Sarawak, for example, I'm looking at Stampin, I'm looking at Cebu, and I'm looking at Puncak Borneo as the key areas. In Sabah, I'm looking at Tawau, Penampang, the interesting contest in Sepanga and Kota Balut. These are a fascinating kind of intensive contests. Tomorrow I head to Kedah. I'm looking at interesting contests in places such as Jerloon, Kubung Pasu, even Baling, to see whether or not Aziz is able to continue to hold on. The seats are very competitive between PAS and UMNO, and even in some key parts of Kedah. I think that the question becomes whether or not UMNO will be able to win back some of the seats, or whether or not Pakatan Harapan and PAS will be able to stay in their respective seats, such as places like Pokok Sena. So I have a list of over 30, but as the nominations come in and the number of candidates that are coming in, seats become much more fascinating, such as Timorlo, for example, in Pahang, another seat that I've been looking at.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to keep our eyes peeled for any surprises on nomination day. Bridget, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I'm probably going to catch you again during this campaign period to see what you're observing while on the campaign trail. That was political analyst Dr. Bridget Welsh from the Asia Research Institute at University of Nottingham, Malaysia. That wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.